G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White is ready to roll. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Harf. What did you hate more, swimming sports day or cross-country day? What did you hate more?
Swimming. No, swimming.
Sorry, an athletics day, to be honest.
No, athletics day is what I'm like. I just dominate athletics day. Dominate athletics day.
Really?
Cross-country.
What sports did you dominate in athletics?
Well, unsurprisingly, you'll notice my power. I was a discus champion. I was a long jump champion. I was a high jump champion. I had some ups.
High jump?
Yeah, I had some ups.
What was the highest you jumped?
This won't be 100% accurate, I don't think, but I reckon it's something along the lines of 185 or 188 or something.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere around
there.
Were
you a frisbee flopman?
No, I wasn't a frisbee flopman. I was a Flosby flopman.
Oh, it was a Flosby, was it? Was it?
It's not a frisbee.
No, Flosby. Did you ever do the scissor kick?
The Flosby flop.
Right.
Now, scissor kick was grade 3
Did you ever land on the butt?
Scissor kick was grade 3 and 4, and then I graduated to the Fosbury flop and dominated proceedings for quite some time there.
Right.
That was good. I used to really enjoy athletics day.
Very good. Right. What about cross country, just because of your athletic prowess? What was your approach to the cross country?
Now, cross country was about survival. I never wanted to win that because then you'd have to keep running at the inter-school ones and then the district sports and then the regional sports.
Yeah. I didn't want to go too far. District zone? You go zone.
Zone, yeah, that's right.
District zone and then state. They're always the ways. I never really knew what the zone was, but it was just a bigger district.
Well, did you ever get through the district one to get to the zone?
Well, amazingly, it was sort of like a 50-to-1 chance. Somehow I found myself in the district cross country. I hated cross country, but for some reason in grade 6 I had a good day. I was like universal prince. I came home really strongly in the last 500 metres or 400 metres and took over a number of people. I was quite inspired by it.
Wow.
And finished, I think, 4th in the school. Now, that was, 100-to-1 for that to happen. And then I tried the same technique at the district. And I think I finished 13th and the top 10 went into the zone. And I was delighted that I finished 13th. A, because I didn't think that was possible, but B, it meant that I didn't have to do the zone.
It's just enough.
Because I didn't want to do
it. You were that horse in the Caulfield Cup that just finished third, just came home hard, finished third, didn't get the weight penalty for the Melbourne Cup.
That's exactly right. I would have been on the racing show just with the darkened screen and just the light bit on the horse coming through. But I always found that fascinating with cross country because you'd always have to do it. And so, rather than do reading or work on your assignment, you'd go outside and run the perimeter of the school 5 times as a class. And that was your training. That was your Bart Cummings preparation for the school cross country. If you then got through to the district or to the zone, you then had to, you're left to your own devices. You had to do your own training.
Fend for yourselves. They just throwed you out in the wilderness. It was over to you from there. That wasn't much fun. Love swimming sports, says the Baker. Guaranteed 3 days off from school. Dominator proceedings. Nice work, Baker. Nice work. What do you get 3 days off for? For the regional and then the zones and all sort of stuff, the different levels.
None of this regional stuff. We're not in America.
Oh, district, I don't bloody know. I can't remember.
State.
District zone. Well, Hamley, you're speaking like an authority on this, and you've never got there, you said. So, come on. There might be some regional activity.
Well, certainly. Well, because it was equivalent to whether it was tennis, like a summer school sport or a winter school sport. So if you're trying to get into the district squad for footy or cricket, and then the zone, and then the state, like you'd have all those tryouts. It was a bit different in the races because it was just where you finished. Whereas when you were trying out for a cricket or a football type situation, It was open to interpretation from teachers or parents.
We never did a try it for the district cricket team, the school, the junior school district cricket team. There's none of that going on, or footy team. There was one state squad.
Yeah, you get
round or round robin it was, for the footy back at Lower Plenty, at Montmorency Footy Club, where we'd go and try and make the state squad. And they put me in a back pocket. What did they do with putting me in a back pocket? The ball was down the other end. I'm an inside beast. Give me where the contest is. Who's coaching this team?
Yeah, but if you were to get picked, you were going to get picked by somebody. It was subject to interpretation. It was subjective.
What's subjective?
Whether you got picked or not, and they were often parents or random people that would just be behind the nets or behind the courts, just with a clipboard, determining who was going to be in the squad. Whereas with the races, it's if you finish first, second, or third, or whatever the cutoff was, you just kept progressing. That's just how it was.
You would have dominated the walk, says Grazer off the SMS, because you're a great walker.
Well, that's right.
We know that you've done the Sorrento. You're like the Chloe McArdle
twice,
of walking.
Twice. Well, that's right. I feel like I'm going to really connect with her.
Yeah,
because
you're an endurance athlete.
We're endurance athletes.
I might just step outside for 10 minutes when we get to Chloe. Just let you and her talk about the challenges of being an endurance athlete and the requirements, physical and mental state. Bit of feedback coming through from Jezza as well. It's now school, division, region, then state. So regionals is close. Zone is officially dead.
What was that?
Very sad about the name change.
Is it really?
School, division, region, then state. There you go. Thank you, Jezza. Nice work.
Where did you progress through the cross country at any point?
I did the second round.
You would have had
times. Yeah, I did the second round a couple of times. I played a few times.
You have to wear the school T-shirt and represent. I remember our district cross country. I can't believe, seriously, it was quite extraordinary. I was a picnics type standard of cross country. some have found my way to racing in town.
The headquarters.
But we're at Ruffy Lake Park.
Ah, yes.
It was a very steep start and used to really break the field open early with the run up. I hated it. Absolutely hated it.
So you are enjoying being in the speedos in front of the girls, though. That would have been your thing.
Nah. God, I hated that stuff. No, I did everything I could not to have to get into the pool. The only reason I'm interested in getting in the pool is if there's a tennis ball that's just been sort of just weighted out where you just dive off and take the catch. That's the only excitement for me getting in a pool.
goodness me.
Yeah. So the text message came in, how far did I walk when I went to Sorrento? It was 96 kilometres. That's what it was, 96 kilometres. And it wasn't to Dramana, it was to Sorrento. Dramana got there at 1 o'clock, 1 a.m. and then 6:30 to Sorrento. I think we should do that. I've talked to you about this before. I would
but
like to do
we're not allowed
to
have a house at the moment, so we're not going to do it for a little while.
No. That's a good point. It's past the 5 kilometre radius.
Yes. I'm not even sure we could meet halfway and just have a chat, you and I, on the boundary of the 5 kilometres house situation. We'd be in trouble. We wouldn't quite get to make contact at any stage. But, walking to anywhere at the moment, apart from the shops, is out of bounds for us. We won't be. We certainly wouldn't be promoting it on the wireless, Adam.
No. Some very interesting text messages about those old days of cross country and, gosh.
They were the days. Were the days. Fantastic stuff. Now,
I've just received a text message to say, tell a story about year 10 when you faked an injury and left Outward Bound camp. Now, that's not entirely true. I didn't fake an injury to get
you
home from Outward Bound camp. I accentuated. There's a difference between fake and accentuating.
Oh,
I had a pre-existing injury.
Good time
I had a pre-existing injury. Yeah, I had a... No. I had a pre-existing injury which should have ruled me out of camp. And I was forced to go. And, you forced me to do anything. You forced me to do anything and I'll make a point of it.
What was your injury?
So, anyhow. No, I had... I'm experienced at the moment, Achilles tendon soreness. And Outward Bound was a 10-day camp where you were sleeping in front of the star, under the stars. There's no tent.
What's that got to do with your Achilles?
Just a tarpaulin. Well, I'm not going to be doing that under any circumstance.
You got sent home with a sore Achilles.
Reluctantly, they didn't want to send me home because apparently there was this thing, you don't get sent home from Outward Bound. Because it's a real test of character and a test of whatever.
And I said, "Well, that's pretty well."
Yeah, that's right. I said, "Well, I'll test your character. You're challenging me that I can't come home. Well, I'll soon tell you who's got the strong character and the strong will." So, yeah.
Did you arrive at Sorrento?
I need a residential address or some sort of appropriate accommodation at night. Tents are bad enough, but open-air situation, no thank you.
Don't you take that opportunity away from your children to be go camping. Get them camping, Adam. Get them out there, into the wilderness, into the open air. Get them out there. Let them enjoy those magic moments.
Did you have that situation at like an Outward Bound? You're really trying to...
I don't even know what you mean, this Outward Bound garbage.
It's like... Well, so you go... It was out near... out near Orbost type area, there was caving involved, and you'd
Fantastic.
Just, you know, you'd be with your... No! So you'd be involved with, like, 12 or 14 others, and you just walk with your rucksack and your sleeping bag, and you just walk aimlessly through vegetation or forest-type surrounds. And then all of a sudden, yeah, we're going to sleep here tonight. And it's Fantastic. Just like, well, no, thank you.
Fantastic. What about
that was
fun?
The worst experience of my life. I was involved with... I obviously had some friends with me because we were in a school situation. But, jeez.
Worst experience of your life, even though you didn't complete it.
2 years in Rome. It was... What's that?
Even though you didn't complete it, it's the worst experience of your life.
Nah. Well, I was there for 2 days.
Great
I was
courage.
There for 2 days, and I returned home in time to see a very important game. Fitzroy were playing... at Princess Park, and got home just in time to see that. You know what? That next day, it was a very important day in the AFL history. It was the first day that Ron Barassi coached Sydney against Carlton at the SCG on a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
I was back for that. So Outward Bound camp. It was a situation where the year before was involved in. I almost tried to hitchhike back down the Maroondah Highway. I could see in the distance. We're up on a cliff top, and there were people in our camp who were involved. You know, you had to share the food in the. You had to share the food in your rucksack because I think these people try to think we're at Vietnam or something like that. You know, you got the stuff in you, carrying the food and trying to build teamwork and all that sort of stuff.
Wasn't your game,
and so sort of late at night, you see some of the people in our group piffing cans of tin food off the cliff because they didn't want to carry it in their bags, and then they'd eat all the chocolate in their tents because they'd keep that because that was nice to eat and it was light. But the cans, the heavy stuff, they're not going to carry that, and they're chucking it off the cliff.
Jeez, I'm glad to hang out with your mates if life got tough. You know, they'd be
they
doing
weren't
right
my
now.
Mates, those people.
They'd be your mates.
They weren't my mates.
And they certainly wouldn't be abiding by the 5 kilometre restrictions that we're currently living under in stage four, those people. They're all about themselves. That's what they are.
No, I was
revealed
scared.
Character.
I was
That's what I did that test. Goodness me.
Yeah, well, no, we can look at it two ways. You can look at the strong determination I showed to get home from that bloody Outward Bound, or you could say I was soft. Now, you look at it either way. I reckon I was both.
Simone Portland says, Outward Bound camp doesn't build character, just eliminates those without it. Or boom. And then someone's getting some feedback in for Frankie Dettori. Joey at the back. Ask Joey about St Monica's camp at St Bernard's. Bit of feedback for the chosen one at the back. And we're not going to do that, of course, because he doesn't have a microphone, but he's going to give us some feedback along the screen. A 4-week camp in year 9 in the Otways, he says, on the screen.
Four weeks?
Oh, no.
No.
Now, you might as well be in boarding school.
That's exactly right. I tell you what, 4 weeks, that's almost like schools where they go to a property for for a term, like
timber top sort of situation. Boy,
camp was for building strength and resilience. I've got plenty of strength and resilience, but I'm not getting involved in camps.
I'm not. Oh, I'll question all that. very good. Now tell me, Magpies kicked 8 goals to 3. Two last night in the second half to sneak away from the Adelaide Crows late in that contest. Adam White, how do we assess the 8 Crows last night? And how do we assess the Magpies from what we saw at the Adelaide Oval?
Well, the Crows gifted Collingwood about 5 goals, they and did. There was those 2 goals just before three-quarter time that just absolutely destroyed Adelaide. Somehow Collingwood, Collingwood couldn't kick a goal to save themselves, and they miraculously kicked 2 in 15 seconds just before three-quarter time, and that clearly sucked the jam out of the donut from an Adelaide perspective. Look, I thought Adelaide tried hard, but Collingwood were terrible. Half. They were terrible.
Well, they had a very undermanned team in, and they were certainly a long way from their best. There was some conversation yesterday from people that I was talking to about one of the worst Collingwood lineups they've seen. Not worst ever, but in terms of the quality they've got, what was out there last night was a long way from being anywhere near their best, let alone the average Collingwood lineup. So it was always going to be an interesting affair from my perspective. They do have a lot of the ball and not score much, though. That is still a concern for the Magpies. At halftime, it was 2-1, and they didn't look like it. And Adelaide really should have been another goal up or so from their opportunities. And even in the third quarter, they had a couple of really good looks at Adelaide and just missed those opportunities. And you're right about that last minute of three-quarter time, before three-quarter time. There was not 15 paid to Paul against Paul Seedsman.
Yeah.
And kicked across goal. It went 20, 25 metres. And then that put the pressure on the Crows, and they coughed up one there. And then, of course, that ball went back to the centre, and they got the clearance. They kicked another one on the siren to Darcy Cameron. I reckon they were stiff, the Crows. They should have gone into three-quarter time, 4 points down or whatever it was, because that shouldn't have happened. That should not have happened. And they moved the ball all right. They tried to do a bit more last night. From the team that we saw, who did they play last time? Melbourne, where they played Melbourne and they just refused to move the ball and long and slow and boring. And it was horrendous. They were very different last night. They tried a bit more. And as you said, they turned the ball over a few times on the back of it. But at least they tried to play a more aggressive style of football. Because had they stuck with what they were doing against Melbourne, they were going to lose anyway. At least they gave themselves a chance to win last night until they ran out of gas and the Magpies found a little mojo late. But the Pies scoring, they ended up with 10, but the last quarter doesn't really count. And even the last 2 minutes of the last minute of the third quarter. So there's 5 goals they've kicked in last quarter and a minute that I don't really count because the game was sort of, they broke the back of the Crows with those last 2 goals in three quarter time. And they still can't score. Doesn't matter what they do, they still can't score. That is a massive concern for them.
It is. And it has been an issue all year. And I know that Nathan Buckley gets a bit prickly about it. And wants to sort of focus on how good their defence is. But as we're seeing, I think, more and more with the good teams coming through, the good teams score and can hit 90 points or 80 points on a regular basis. And, I think the one thing, it's something my dad often says to me about teams that put together a game style that they're incapable to execute because they just don't have the skills to execute it. And I sometimes think that that's the case with Collingwood. With the injuries that they've got, they're still trying to play a game style and trying to, you know, hit these 20, 30-metre targets through traffic that they're incapable of being able to do, and they tend to turn the ball over. Because they don't have Pendlebury out there, you know, with the skills that he's got, etc. But I still think that it's a bit of an excuse with Collingwood to say, oh, it's just their injuries, because they've been a bit average all year with offence. And that was when they had their players in there. So it's not a question of whether they can defend. They can defend, particularly the slow ball movement. But I think that if they're going to be a contender, if they're going to be a top eight team, to be honest, I think they've got to improve their offence.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. They do need to find a way to be a bit more attacking at the scoreboard. I don't think they'll be relying on on Darcy Cameron to be kicking goals for them when the whips are cracking a little bit later on in the in proceedings. Or Rusko to kick two goals late off the deck. I'm not sure that's going to be their solution for a premiership tilt in season 2020.
So I've got a question for you. When you've got a lot of players out, so your team's obviously not as good, can you simplify the game plan? Or is it too indoctrinated in everybody from all the work that you've done in the pre-season that you can't come out and say, right, we're going to play this way today, we're going to simplify it? Or am I being far too simplistic in asking that question and too naive to say that's just not the way it's done these days?
I think you can adjust it. And we were talking a little bit about this with Rocket yesterday. I think you can adjust it. You can't go to a new level of extreme because the players are, as you say, indoctrinated. But it becomes habit really quickly. And the amount of time they spend doing that system, playing that system, all those little small games, small-sided games within the requirements that they want in the bigger-sided game, the big 18-on-18 game, it's just habit. Things just happen really quickly because you've got no time and space anyway these days. So things happen really quickly. So you just fall back into our habits. That's what all the training's about. The training's about habit. So trying to make a drastic change to that, it can prove difficult, particularly if you haven't got your best players out there. So if you've got the players that aren't as capable and you're asking them to do different things, then that's going to be a challenge. So there is an element you can adjust, but you can't go whole-scale changes and transform the way you play overnight. It's too hard. They'll lose themselves. And you don't want that.
Now, before we go to a break, I just want to mention, and I know it's someone who's close to your heart, Lyndon Dunn, playing that game last night.
The great Dunn.
He certainly looked interesting.
Fantastic.
But out of the 2004 National Draft, only he and Lance Franklin are currently on an AFL list from the 2004 National Draft. Eddie Betts is also on a list, but he was in the pre-season draft that year, not the National Draft.
Yes.
So some of the names, it's interesting going through the 2004 draft. At the top end, Brett Delidio, Jared Ruffhead, Ryan Griffin were the top three. We're talking to Ruffy a little bit later on today. Richard Tambling was 4, Lance Franklin 5, Tom Williams 6, Jordan Lewis 7. But some of the other players from that draft, Lyndon Dunn was 15. Got players like Nathan Van Berlo was in that draft, Matt Rosa, Brent Prismal, Mark Lacroix, Travis Cloak was father son. A lot of players have been retired a long time, Daniel.
Lyndon is still playing. A couple of knee recos. It was great to see him out there. That goal he kicked last night was the fire starter, as they might say these days in the commentary, for the Magpies to get things rolling at the Adelaide Oval. Well done to them. Win over the Crows. Crows didn't lose to many admirers last night. They just weren't good enough in the end. And I think that's okay for where they are. Just be a bit more bold with their footy and they'll be
trying.
Yeah, that was good. Last night was good. Much better improvement from the Crows. Yeah, absolutely. Happy birthday to Sherelle McMahon today, the 12th of August in 1977. She was born. Yeah. Now she can hang out with all the cool 43-year-olds in the world. Sherelle, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you, guys. Oh, what a nice way to start the morning with a happy birthday being sung to me from you guys. And I think I've been reasonably spoilt by the family as well.
Well, did you get breakfast in bed? There would have been some bacon and eggs, a little bit of French toast maybe. What'd you get?
Couscous?
No.
Some couscous.
Well, no. Couscous? No, that's a weird one. No, definitely no couscous in bed. Actually, I did get a coffee in bed, but I also got wheeled into me a new bike.
Oh boy. Hey, when was the last time you got a new bike? When you were 7?
Yeah, actually, do you know what? That's probably the last time I remember anyone gifting me a new bike, literally when I started primary school, so when I was 5. But this one came after I went for a ride with the kids the other night and my pedal literally fell off after having this bike probably for about, I would say, 15 years or something around that mark. So, yeah, time for a new one. I didn't think so, but the hubby did, so it was very nice.
Well, you could go for a ride with Whitey. He's a cycling connoisseur. He's a very, very famous cyclist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I know his bike was rescued after it being stranded for quite some time, so we definitely could get together for a ride, Whitey.
That's right. It was in a garage for over 12 months, and it wasn't my garage. We were talking about this earlier. Is couscous, would you describe couscous as an alternative food?
No. I certainly wouldn't call it a breakfast food.
That's not breakfast.
No, it's not a breakfast food. No.
But this is part of the discussion you were having earlier. No, it's not an alternative food. No. I mean, it's alternative to rice, I guess, but.
Yeah, because we had a text message from someone that said that they're on a school camp and they had couscous. Now, I would say that that's random, very sort of odd. Do you cook it, do you?
Just put it in the boil of water, mate. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it doesn't take... Actually, that's the thing about couscous. You kind of just pour the hot water over it and fluff it up and then it's done. So I get it from that point of view because you can easily make a big quantity. I never had couscous on my school camp, though. I tell you that right now.
No, couscous is easy, mate. Get involved with a bit of couscous, Whitey. It's delicious.
I actually haven't had couscous for a while. I'm going to put that back on the menu. I love couscous.
What would you have it with? Isn't it something you just sort of sprinkle unnecessarily over something to make it look better?
No, it's not a garnish. What are you talking about, man?
I often roast some veggies, stir them through, maybe a bit of feta. It's actually really good. It's very nice.
A little bit of Greek yogurt, some kangaroo fillet. Beautiful.
Oh, God. You eat yogurt out of a tub and you look at kangaroos from afar as they bound away in a sort of a plains situation.
Real you know, they good eat lean kangaroo? Meat. Lean meat nah, situation you. For you. You love it. It's delicious.
Good meat.
It's delicious. Don't you worry about that. Now, Sherelle, we got sidetracked talking about his alternative foods, which is not quite alternative. Happy birthday again, by the way. I hope the kids look after you, and you've got a bike, so that's pretty cool. What does the cake look like? You don't have to make your own, do you?
It's 37 o'clock.
What's it going to look like?
I haven't seen the cake. I do think there is going to be a cake, but I don't know what it's going to be like. Our next-door neighbour is a young family, and so the dad in that family has a birthday today. So I don't know. We might be combining over the fence, so we might actually be having a party. I don't know. That's what I would do if I was organising my party, but I'm not organising it, so we'll see.
Right. So, Breck, if you're listening, which you clearly are because you messaged us this morning about the birthday, you need to sort that out. Hey, things are going pretty well for your girls at the Vixens. They're sorting things out nicely at the start of the season, Sherelle. Dominating proceedings.
Are they ever? It was a really great game against the Firebirds. And, you know, it's interesting, the Firebirds still living at home, not in the hub life situation. So there's so much unknown about elite sport that is going on at the moment and how teams are going to cope, how individuals are going to cope. So at the moment, the Vixens with that 28-goal win over the Firebirds, they were seriously impressive. It was good to see.
Luke Matthews, an Australian middle-distance runner who should have been in Tokyo running his 8 and 1500, hopefully, for Australia, but not to be because of the COVID situation. But that wasn't why he was under the pump in the first place. And he joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Luke.
Hey, boys. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
We're going very, very well and appreciate your company this morning. COVID-19's obviously ruined the Olympics for everyone, but it's almost thrown you a little bit of a lifeline because you were having some troubles leading up into that with some plantar fasciitis. Most people would have been lamenting the fact there was no Olympics. What were you doing when it was cancelled?
The plantar fasciitis. I've had a few friends that have gotten that and I finally experienced the weight and the bearing of that. But yeah, it's pretty... when I found out, I had a sigh of relief, had a couple of beers, and I thought, oh, thank God, because the delay for me kind of worked into my favour. So I was it was a very negative moment in our life. But yeah, for me personally, the delay came at a really good time.
What would have been the situation had it gone ahead, the Olympics? Would you have been able to get to Tokyo? And all that work and the build-up in the last 4 years would have been all for nothing because you wouldn't have been able to play or run because of your foot?
Look, to be honest with you, I never say never. I don't think that it would have been easy. I think that I would have had to have had a fair amount of legal injections, like in my foot. I think that I would have made something work, but do I think I would have qualified? It would have been incredibly tough. Do I think I would have gone well at the Olympics if I had gotten there? Probably not. But I had a couple of injections in my foot, like cortisone, and it did nothing. So I think I would have struggled to get there.
Luke, I want to wind things back to the previous Olympic Games in Rio 2016. You were over there, you're running the 800 and the 1500 metres. I've read a little bit about the training program leading into that. I was shocked that you were at that stage running 140Ks a week to prepare yourself for that.
Look, to be honest with you, 140Ks is a pretty standard week in the build-up to in the base phase, I suppose. I was only 20 for a lot of the training up to the Olympics, and I just turned 21 just beforehand. So I was pretty raw, pretty inexperienced in international athletics. So, made a few mistakes on the way and, obviously the coach that I was with at the time, I've now had a split with. And one of the reasons why we split was that I didn't agree fully with the coaching. So, from there, I've kind of learned that although you do need to hit those 140Ks, in the build up, I think the thing that kind of threw me over the edge was that I was training too hard and too often, in the month or two leading up to it. And look, if I had my time again, and hopefully I do in Tokyo 2021, I certainly won't be doing 140Ks or whatever it might have been the week of or the couple of weeks leading into the Olympics.
So when you were lining up for those races in Rio, 800 and 1500, how were you feeling? Do you look back now and think you would do things differently? Were you feeling really strong and ready to go, or what was it? Because in the end, unfortunately, you were a reasonable way off your PB when you ran that heat in the 800 metres.
Yeah, I completely underperformed and I was completely off my best. And if I had ran, somewhere near my best or what I thought I was capable of, I think that, a final might have been a possibility. How was I feeling before the races? Oh, not confident at all. I think you try to bluff some confidence and do a couple of sessions where you might be able to fake some confidence. But in the 800, I was hoping that I might be able to at least make it through a semi, but I was nowhere near it. And then for the 1500, I was quietly hoping that my coach would pull me out because I was pretty embarrassed after the 800, and I didn't really want to tackle the 1500. So I hopefully want to never be in a situation like that before an Olympics and before a major champs.
So take us through when you're doing your training for the 800 and the 1500, when we talk about all the kilometres you're running, and I think you're up at about 80, 85 at the moment, how do you break that down? Is it just repeat 1500 metres? Is it you're going on 10K runs? How do you train for the events that you actually participate in?
So my training's changed a little bit, probably in the last year or so. Around that time, I was doing three hard sessions a week with two or so gym sessions, a long run, and then some kind of medium to long runs sprinkled throughout. Now, I think we're going to try go the quality over quantity method, and that's two really hard quality sessions. And the reason why we do two is that's just to hopefully keep freshness throughout the whole year. And also be ready to go come the major championships. For me personally, it's going to be, two sessions, a long run once a week, and then pretty much everything in between that will be recovery runs to make sure that I just keep that pop and that step in my leg. So it's a bit of a puzzle. It's a bit of a puzzle kind of managing the week of athletics, but I think from now on it'll definitely be that quality over quantity approach, and it might not be as simple as hitting 140Ks, but it'll be more be trying to hit goals each week as opposed to an exact number.
So for you, what's a long run? How many kilometres?
so the long run at the moment, it's only about 18K, which is short for me, but I'd say within the next 2 months, it'll probably be somewhere near 24, 25K on a Sunday. So, yeah, it's pretty rough.
On the weekend, it was Liam Reddy's birthday, the Perth Glory goalkeeper, and he had four go past him because the mighty Melbourne Victory got it done under the interim coach, Grant Brebner, who would have been very happy about that. Grant, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I've not been on previously after the three defeats, so I purposely made sure I came on this morning to enjoy the 4-0 game.
We've been holding on until you got a victory, mate, is what we've been doing, and you've done it with a 4-0 smacking of Perth. What was different, Brebs?
You know, in all honesty, and that's what I've been saying, we just didn't have a little bit of luck in front of goal. Our performances have been very good. You know, I've never came away from games, and I'll probably explain that a little bit more in detail in a bit, but I've never came away from games feeling that we were outplayed or overpowered. I was actually quite disappointed in the three previous games, but the other night against Perth, it all came together and we managed to get the four and keep a clean sheet as well, which was important.
And just the one match left for the season, it's fair to say that it's been a bit of a tough season for the Victory this year. How have you approached taking over the manager, the head coach role? Has it been something that you wanted to really push for the end of this season, or had you already kind of turned your mind to next season? How did you approach it?
Yeah, Sherelle, it's a good question because it has been difficult, and I don't think I ever wanted to shy away from that or you know, get above my station and start, you know, beating the drums about how good we're going to be and how things were going to change. In all honesty, over these five games, there's another one tonight, it could have went two ways. We basically lost our whole starting 11 from the first game of the season, and we needed to make changes. Now, I had to have a lot of trust in the changes and the players that I was putting in the position. So I brought in a lot of youth, and as you've seen, and complement that with some experienced players. But the big ticket items for me were bringing the group together, because I felt we'd lost that, playing for each other, which we spoke about so many times, and narrowing that gap between the experienced players and the youth team so that everybody felt that they were an opportunity to play, not just the experienced guys. So I feel we've done that, Sherelle. I feel that we've really sort of got a little bit of our DNA back, and which was, as I've always said, a build-up towards next season. So I think we are in a better place.
Yeah, and I mean, you took over the interim head coach role a few weeks before you went into the hub situation and got this season done and finished. I'm interested in what your approach has been and how what you've learnt about yourself in that head coach role, because it's something that you haven't done at this level before.
Yeah, no, it's. I'm glad you're asking the good questions, Sherelle. The other two just keep asking me nonsense questions.
That's why she's here.
What have I learned about myself? Opinions. You know the amount of opinions I get and phone calls and text messages? It's incredible, because I, after a game, you know, I receive many text messages, and one text message will say, oh, this player didn't do so well, and then the next message will be, that player was outstanding, the same player. And it's like, you've got to step aside from everybody else's opinion and back your own and listen to, obviously, your staff.
Yeah.
And what we see Monday to Friday is not necessarily what everybody's seeing on a match day. Because when you bring back, you know, the word culture and everything, leadership, I mean, I think the biggest thing is we see players go out on a Saturday, and if they play well, then everybody sees that. But if they are not turning up on time, if they're slacking in training, if they're not doing what other players are doing, then you quickly lose culture. So I've really had to drive, learn, understand at a management level about, you know, making sure that everybody's pulling their weight. And they've bought into it, which has been great. So, no, I've really enjoyed it, Sherelle.
So have you enjoyed it more than you thought you would? And is it something now you think, yeah, I'm ready to do this on a more permanent basis? I know you haven't put your hand up necessarily for the Victory coaching position, but how have you assessed it?
No, I've loved it. I really have. The losses, the first three losses were disappointing, but I still enjoyed the performances. I've enjoyed training because when you can look your players in the eye and you can see that they're giving you everything, you still get a buzz out of that. You still, you know, it's what gets you up out of your bed in the morning. So everything that I'm doing, yes, there's the off-pitch stuff, you know, there's the media, there's dealing with the board, there's fans. But I really, really have enjoyed, not saying I didn't enjoy that part of it, but I really have enjoyed managing and coaching the players. And is it something I want to do? I've always said it is. But I've always kind of said as well that I want to develop, keep developing, which, you know, this has been the biggest learning curve being thrown in at the deep end. So it stood me in a better position now moving forward. And like I said, if it comes, when it comes, I would love to do it.
Well, the name Jared Roughead in the world of Australian rules football is very, very familiar to most. A storied career, 283 games with the Hawks, a four-time premiership player, Coleman medal, two-time All-Australian, a captain, three-time Hawk leading goal kicker, amongst a wonderful career in the brown and the gold. He's been good enough to join us today on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Ruff.
Good morning, guys.
Great to have you with us. Now, I go through all that, and that's pretty impressive from a football sense, but these days, you're also an author. You've got the new book out, Ruffy, the autobiography. I want to ask you, what's it like writing a book about your life?
Yeah, initially, I was pretty scared, I guess, because I'm not one that really enjoys talking about myself too much, but I guess with this one, it's a little bit of a different type of footy book. It's not just your kicks, marks, handballs. There's a little bit of story there with what happened with my health a few years ago, and hopefully something that the kids will enjoy when they grow up.
Well, were you always keen to tell the story and put it in this sort of form when you were ready for it, and when you finished playing, or was it something that somebody sort of suggested and it took a bit of while to get your head around?
It took a little bit of convincing, just because you know, I've kind of not moved on, but I've definitely left that little bit of my life behind now, because I'm, you know, now a dad of two and moving forward in life. But at the same time, I guess it is a good story to tell in regards to, you know, clinical trials and not being scared to try them, and giving some hope to cancer sufferers out there.
Yeah, well, it's a great message and a really great story, obviously, with the way things have gone on. Was it a bit of therapy for you? Was it an element of therapy, getting it all out there and putting it to paper?
Yes and no. I've been pretty open with when people ask questions or want to know some information around it. I guess it's just now on paper that everyone can see it. And, you know, if people need to reach out, they can. I've, you know, spoken to a lot of people in regards to advice and what to expect when going through the treatment. So I guess now, pardon the pun, it's a bit of an open book.
Oh, well done. I like that one, Rocky. So when you were reflecting on your career, obviously that was a massive part of it. What was it like remembering all those times and the experiences that you've had across your career?
Oh, for me, it was great. You know, some of the photos that you pick out and some of the stories you relive. I've been very, very lucky to be a part of a great footy club and obviously had some success. So when you're reliving moments like that, they're obviously good times. So I had no trouble talking about the good times and some of the bad times as well. I mean, you and I both have a connection as well, Sherelle, with our Achilles, and, you know, I reached out when I did mine, so there's all little stories in there as well.
Yeah, we did. Unfortunately, we've both joined the ruptured Achilles club back in 2011, and I vividly remember you doing that because I think I was still probably in my moon boot at the time, and when I saw you make that movement on the field, I was like, oh, no, I know what that is. But you did. You reached out. We had a couple of catch-ups. And I guess, you know, obviously your experience with the cancer was a huge thing. But in terms of your athletic career, snapping an Achilles is a really tough thing to get through. And I'm always amazed at how many people have done it, actually. But what was your mental process going through those different tough times that you experienced? How were you able to remain positive and keep moving forward?
Well, I think once I was given a timeline or a date of when you could possibly come back or how long you're going to be out for, you put that to the back of the mind and it's like, right, oh, well, we can attack the rehab and what needs to happen over this next, you know, whatever time for the Achilles. It ended up being 9 months because unfortunately mine got infected as well and I had to start again. But once I was given a timeline from doctors, it was just attack it from there. So there was no point worrying about what could happen or what, you know, what had led to the incident happening. But as long as I stayed positive and you know, attacked rehab as best as I could, then I was going to get back no worries at all.
There's so many questions I'd love to ask you, Ruffy, but I want to go back to draft camp before you were drafted. And I was there that time up in Canberra where it was yourself up there, Brett DeLidio, Lance Franklin, Jordan Lewis, all these guys that were, it was a very strong draft. When did you think that there was a chance you were going to go as early as you did in the draft when you got to that draft camp?
Oh, probably not to the draft camp. I remember having a few interviews with teams and some were saying, oh, we're just having an interview just to see you as a person and we don't think we're going to be able to get you, but it'd be nice if we could. I remember coming home and the night before school graduation, Greg Miller, who was the GM of Richmond, had rang me and said, we're going to take you at pick four tomorrow. So, you know, you're invited back to the president's house and we'll see you tomorrow. And, you know, I was over the moon. I was telling everyone and, you know, I thought I was going to Richmond for 24 hours, really.
Yeah. Oh, because I wanted to touch on that a little bit more because there were three clubs that had two picks each to start the draft, Hawthorn, Richmond and the Bulldogs. And we all know how it all played out. But at the time, there was talk that Lance was going to go to the Bulldogs, you were going to go to Richmond. It sort of didn't necessarily pan out the way we all thought it would. So what discussions did you have with Hawthorn before the draft when it was all thought that you were going to go to Richmond?
Yeah, I had absolutely none. Bucky and the team at Hawthorn kept their cards close to their chest. I think even leading up to the draft over grand final week, or maybe not grand final week. Oh, no, it was around then. I think Richard Tamling was staying at Bucky's house, yeah. And they threw out a couple of smoke screens in regards to, you know, what people thought they were going to do. And then, it completely changed 5 minutes into the draft.
Yeah, it's amazing. And half Jordan Lewis was also in that draft, just outside the top six. And then it became that famous trio, I guess, Ruffy, in a lot of ways, of you, Lance and Jordan, all top 10 picks going to Hawthorn and rebuilding the club. Did you know that, did you feel early that you guys were going to be the nucleus of the next era, or did it take a while for that to kind of evolve?
No, it definitely took time. If you ask the older boys when we first got there, they'll probably think, who are these three smartasses that are coming in and acting like they are? But, you know, I still got dropped a couple of times in my third year when I was 20. So there was no thought that, you know, we were the saviours at, you know, 17, 18 when we first got to the club. It definitely took a bit of time. But having those two boys there was great for all of us because we could bounce off each other. We were there for each other. And, you know, you even go 10, 12 years down the track and we're all involved in each other's wedding parties, which is great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when you tell a story about Geordie was the first guy you rang when you got the news about your cancer scare. And I imagine, and you've told that story many times, and we've heard it a few times, but I still think about that and the fact that you went to the footy club and that was your place of comfort in that time. It must have been a very special place, Ruff, for you to go straight there.
Well, half you've been a part of Hawthorn, and that's all I've known. So I'm a 17-year-old kid that moves from the country. I move to Melbourne, and I'm indoctrinated in Melbourne life. And then all of a sudden, you know, this happens. And other than home, that is the safest place, the footy club. You know, you've got so many good people that were there at the time, and you know, would wrap your arms around you. And I really didn't have any other place to go.
And what were you expecting when you got there? What were you hoping to happen, or were you just in a bit of a haze at that time when you got there?
I think you're just going there for that support and comfort. I guess I can't go home, or I couldn't tell Sarah over the phone via text message or call. I knew I had to plan out how to tell her, and you know, going to the footy club and having all those people that, you know, make great decisions at the footy club in Clarko and Fags at the time, Jack Russell. Geordie was there, our club doctor was there. It was the right place for me to go at the time because we're all together and we could all, you know, have a cry, which we did, but also then start to plan what it was going to look like for the next little bit.
Yeah, it's such a significant thing to have happen to you, Ruffy. When you went to the club and for the next little period of time, was there a view to getting back to playing footy, or was that totally put to the side and you were just focusing on your health at that point? Where did you get to in terms of that mental process?
Well, at the time I was only a couple of weeks away from playing, I'd come off a PCL reconstruction and had done all the rehab and thought I was, you know, I was hoping to get back for Geordie's 250th, which was in Brisbane. And I was, you know, had the mindset of, right, I'm only a couple of weeks away from playing. But then when the docs say, you know, you could be on treatment for 18 months, 2 years, you initially think, well, you know, that could be 2 years of footy gone, and what's going to happen for the rest of my career. I think I was still contracted for 3 or 4 years at that time. So I suppose that was the carrot dangling for me, is that if I was going to ever get back, then why not, you know, why not try and get back? There's no point trying to just give up on your footy career or what you'd known for 12 years at the time. It was, righto, let's do what we have to do with treatment and getting myself right, and then hopefully get back to playing footy.
Well, always nice to catch up with Isaac Smith from the Hawks on the Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum. I want to find out how he is today, because not often do we get to him and he's been injured, but he's joining us from the Hub Life in Perth. Isaac, good morning.
Morning, Arf. Morning, Whitey.
Great to have you with us, mate. You went off the other night against Freo and the 16-point loss, which was disappointing in itself, but you didn't come back on. You had some tracksuit top activity, and once the tracksuit top comes on, Isaac, we know it's all over. What's happened?
Nah, just a little knock on the shoulder. Nah, not too often that I put the tracksuit top on, but it was nice and warm with it on, and I got to have a bit of fun on the bench. Disappointing we couldn't get the win, but it's always next week.
Yes, there always is next week. And that's Sunday for the Eagles, for the Hawks next up. But it almost seemed like it was a pivotal moment in the game too, Isaac, when you went off. There seemed a bit, not necessarily wanting you to pump yourself up here, but when you did go off, there seemed to be a lack of real flow in the game from the Hawks at that point in time. Could you be able to put your finger on why that might have been?
I actually think Freo are really good defensively. They probably showed it the week before against Collingwood. They had a really good win, and we probably played into their hands a little bit last night. We tried to handball a bit through them, and defensively they were really good at coming up and shutting us down and causing turnovers and going back the other way. But yeah, it was a very disappointing loss, and not one that you really want to have.
We spoke to you before the Carlton game last time, and you were pretty bullish about what might be that day, and obviously that started slow, but then you steamrolled home in the last three quarters. After that game, did the mood change a little bit about from the playing group and the coaching staff? So, righto, we can do this. We're actually pretty good at this. We can do this thing at the moment.
Yeah, we're pretty positive coming out of that Carlton game. I think we've been thinking for a little while that our best footy certainly challenges any team in the competition, but our worst footy is probably bottom four at the moment, which is very disappointing. So we've got to play our best footy more often than we play our worst, and at the moment that's not happening.
It looked like it had turned against Carlton, and it didn't look like it had turned early, but it felt like you'd unlocked it a bit. Did Fremantle sort of come prepared for what perhaps you might have done to Carlton after quarter time, particularly sort of trying to go through the corridor and move the ball quickly?
Yeah, I think they probably came with a plan defensively to shut us down, but I didn't think we executed what we wanted to do offensively, which was disappointing. We probably ramped the pressure up that didn't need to be pressure there in the end. So that was just from watching from the bench and seeing it. We haven't gone through our game review or anything like that, but we'll go through that soon. And, yeah, we'll check it all out. But, yeah, it looked like we probably played right into their hands, and then they were able to change angle on the ball, switch the ball, and even though I don't think they had too many more inside 50s, I'm not sure what the stats were. They were probably having their shots from easier positions on the ground.
It's frustrating that we have to ask sort of negative questions to you again, but it's just the nature, obviously, of the way your team's playing at the moment.
Opportunity, Whitey, not negative.
opportunity. But
it's a good mindset, a growth mindset, Adam. It's a growth mindset.
That's right. But I am interested in...
21st century.
Yeah. I'm interested in the mindset of the senior players, that obviously you've been disappointed and a little bit perplexed with how you've been playing, because I know you had high hopes internally with what was possible this year. But what's the emotion like now, where you thought you might have turned the corner and now you're back where you were, and the lack of goals? Is there frustration? Is there anger? How would you describe the senior guys particularly?
Yeah, I think it's frustration, probably not just with the senior guys, but with the whole club in general. I think You know, the coach is obviously disappointed, and so are the younger players. But as frustrating as it is, we've all got a job to do. And I know it's a bit of a cliche. We've just got to work hard and try and work through it. We're all locked away in a hotel together, so we get great opportunity to spend time together and work these things out. And we probably thought we turned the corner last weekend, but we took a backward step last, when was it? 2 nights ago, which was disappointing. And yeah, we just got to keep working at it. And we've got some good young kids coming through. Will Day's been showing a hell of a lot of promise. Jack Scrimshaw, Blake Hardwick, James Warple. So we've got a few young guys coming through, and we've just got to get better.
So with you sitting on the bench for most of the night, unfortunately, did you pick up anything that you hadn't noticed when you were playing the game that helped as a senior player? I noticed at one point you had a chat to Tom Scully at three-quarter time. That was just watching it on the television. But what were you able to pick up that you thought, oh, okay, I didn't realise this was happening when I was actually playing the game over the last 5 or 6 weeks?
Yeah, certainly when you're out on the ground, you don't see it the way you see it if you're sitting in a coach's box or on the bench. When you're on the coach's box or the bench, everything seems to slow down, and you actually probably see the game from a zoomed out view where there's no such thing as perceived pressure on the bench or in the coach's box. But I could just see we weren't generating any probably energy around the ball. And Tom Scully, we know when he was at GWS, was brilliant at getting handball receives and generating their ball movement. And you could just see we kept getting held up at stages. So, yeah, I was pretty much plain and simply just saying to him, if he could get involved in the play and build the ball up through the ground, then he could have a fair bit of impact on that last quarter.
So we heard Clarko say post-match that he will start to keep drip-feeding the young talent through the team the next little while and see what he's got. Probably on the list. Who would be likely to be those next chain of players that to come in and have an opportunity, Isaac, through what you've seen through the little scratch matches we've seen, you would have played or the boys would have played over there in the hubs?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm probably privy to it, but I haven't heard what Clarko said in the presser. Probably, thank God, by the sounds of it.
it wasn't drastic. He just said that there was, we've got some kids we want to give a go to, so this might be the time we start drip feeding them. Not wholesale changes, so your spot's okay.
Yeah.
But just which ones have impressed you? Probably the question, I suppose.
We've got a few young kids on the list that have been pretty impressive. Finn McGuinness. I think he was a father-son pick. Well, his dad certainly played for us. Not sure if he was a father-son pick in the end, but yeah, he looks pretty good. We've got a few guys that have been around for 2, 3, 4 years. Mitchy Lewis has sort of been in and out of injuries a little bit. So, yeah, I'm sure there's probably 7 or 8 guys they're looking at to bring in and give a bit of a go and see how they'll go. But we'll just wait and see how that all unfolds and when they get their opportunity.
James Sicily. Now, we debated this, yesterday? I think it was. Yeah, it was. Oh, I forget what day it is now. Just in whether he could play forward and whether that's something we might see a little bit more of. I know that it's been tried previously with mixed success. There's been a couple of great times where he's gone forward. Would you like to see him try that a little bit more to see what's there, or is he just too good for you when he plays that role he plays so well back in defence?
I think Sis has certainly matured a lot in the footy sense over the last few years, where he had a go down forward early in his career and they moved him down back, and he's probably become, if not the number one intercept marker in the competition, he'd be up there in the top handful. So he's very good down back and he uses the ball very well, but I guess if you can get goals out of him and multiple goals out of him during a game, you'd love to see him up forward. But at the moment, he does a great job for us down back, and I guess that's one for the coaches to see what they'd want to do. But certainly the last couple of weeks when we're throwing him up forward, he's had shots on goal and had impact on the game and even had a bit of a hover up there on Monday night, which was pretty nice to see and certainly excited the crowd and a few of the boys. So, yeah, I think Sis is at that time in his footy career now that you could nearly play him in any position on the ground and he'd be a very impactful player.
Mark Milligan, who is a name well known to sports fans across the nation because he's a former Socceroos captain and has come back home to play with MacArthur FC
in the new team in the Hyundai A-League in the 2021 season. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
Going really well. Thank you, buddy. I really appreciate your time. And boy, this was good news for the A-League when this was announced that you were going to be coming and being the star signing for MacArthur FC. Why are you coming back to MacArthur?
First and foremost, I think as these strange times continue, I think a lot of people have obviously been affected by COVID, and it was no different for us over in the UK. And when we decided to come back, we decided it had to be something long term. And after sitting down with Ante and having a good chat through things and what he wanted for the club and things like that, I thought it was a good fit for me. I wanted to come back and I want to see the A-League successful, and I think the best way to help at the moment is to help make MacArthur successful.
Are you worried about the A-League?
I think going forward it looks to be in a much better place. I think the fact that they've been able to get it off the ground and continue to finish the season was very good and very important in terms of the TV rights and things like that. I think they needed to put the product back on show, and I think the players have done a wonderful job in the return. So I think going forward, I think it's in a lot stronger place than it was at the beginning of all this COVID stuff.
Now, I must confess, Mark, I think there was a fair bit of hope, including from us, that you may have gone back to the Victory. But was that ever a possibility? Or, as you said, that whole idea of a long-term deal but also starting something new was something that was really attractive to you?
Look, to be honest, the main motivation behind that was, probably my kids, to be honest. They've given a lot over the years. And yep. I haven't always made it easy on them travelling around and things like that. So I have a lot of family in Sydney, and as much as I wanted to keep playing and do what was good for me in my football career, it was time for me to give a little bit back to them. And Sydney had to be, Sydney for me was a more obvious choice in terms of being able to set them up and give them some time with their family as well.
So I want to know, how many different countries have you actually played soccer in? So you're talking about the sacrifices you have to make, your family has to make for you to do what you do, and over your career, how many places have you played?
Too many, mate. Too many. I've got one. My eldest daughter was born in Japan. My middle, Audrey, was born in Melbourne, and my youngest was born in Abu Dhabi. And after that, I've been to Saudi and UK.
Right.
Bit of Scottish Premier League action there. It's unbelievable.
That's right. So where was, outside of Australia, where's the favourite place for you to have played football? But not just playing football, but living in a society, I guess.
Look, Japan was very, very good to us. As I said, I had my first child there, and I spent a good 3 years there, and I think the football there taught me a lot from that side of things. I think the game taught me a lot. Maybe that was the age I was at. Maybe that was the country. Maybe that was the players. But I think from a footballing point of view, the 3 years I had in Japan before I came back to Victory were very important in my footballing development. And it was a lovely place to live. My wife still speaks about Japan and their culture and especially the food there. The food there was amazing. So, look, I think from if I had to pick probably one place, and we went through some hard times there as well, experiencing the earthquake, the massive earthquake they had, and things like that. So it wasn't always easy there, but I think now that I sort of look back and I had to pick somewhere outside of Australia from a footballing point of view and lifestyle, Japan was probably the best for us.
Sounds like a nice place. My sister lived there as well. She said it's a fantastic place to live. But you're back in the A-League with MacArthur. You mentioned Ante before. Ante Milicic has got the job as the coach of MacArthur FC. And you've got some really good signings as well. Tommy Orr and Adam Federici alongside you, which are well-known names in Australian football. Is it enough to, or do you think you're a chance to sort of come on the scene really quickly and contend to be a finals team, MacArthur? Is it too early to tell?
Being such a long lead into the season, obviously the A-League at the moment is sort of starting to wind up and head into finals time. We're going to start training at the beginning of next month, so it gives Ante a long time with the squad. And, you know, I know there's a lot of players that haven't been announced and are close or on the radar. So, look, I think when you get that much time with a team and knowing Ante, he's very, you know, methodical in the way that he prepares. So I think having that 3 months, you know, will definitely give us a good platform leading into the start of next season.
And your relationship with Ante, was that one of the clinches?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, probably the main thing for me is that, you know, Ante, he's very thorough in what he does. And, you know, when we sat down and we were having the discussion about, you know, how much longer I wanted to play for and things like that, you know, he knew better than I did how many games I've played over the last three seasons each season and all my statistics. And, you know, it sort of reiterated to me how switched on he is and how thorough he is in how he does things. And, you know, that sort of the way that he goes about things appeals to me as a player.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.